from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Top of the 8 o'clock hour here in our nation's capital. It's overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. It's the Youngest in Charge movement. Linnell Willingham taking you up to 10 o'clock before we hand things over to the Infinity Sports Network. I said it last segment. To me, Can I give you one word that I feel like is needed and is going to perfectly describe training camp? It's competition. It's competition. I think competition is necessary. And I think it brings the best out of a football team. The best teams in the NFL, no one is just handed a job. It's not how it works. It's not how it works. You got to compete. You got to earn it. And I feel as if this camp in particular, with the massive roster overhaul that has happened here, I think competition is going to be higher than we ever can remember when it comes to the Washington Commanders. Even that quarterback. Y'all remember, I was saying it months ago before we knew who they were going to select. I want competition in every spot. I don't care if, you know, there's quarterback competition. I don't care if there's receiver. It should be everywhere. I want the damn janitors competing for who's got the cleanest floor in the building. I want the chefs competing with who cooks the best ribeye. I need competition everywhere across this organization, and I think this training camp, starting Wednesday, we are going to see it. What was that, Uptown Don? Did you get a call from the zoo? Live from the zoo is our pal, the caged one, Chris Russell. How are you, my friend? I know this is a little bit of a surprise for you.
Yeah, they finally let the rooster out of the cage. So, you know, cock-a-doodle-doo, and you know, I'm here to entertain and perhaps frustrate. How are you?
I'm good, man. Look, I was saying it in the last segment, and we'll get your thoughts on training camp here and what you are expecting to see here in the next couple of days. But Chris, I believe I mentioned it with you last week on Windbag Wednesday, which you can catch every week, 1-4 Wednesday on the Team 980, as well as Throwdown Thursday, 1-4 over on the Team 980. You can check out the Chris Russell Show.
Very good radio promotion, my friend.
Come on, my man. You can check out the Chris Russell Show all 5 days of the week over on the Team 980.
Yes,
but something
please
that we sparred about last week, I don't even think we sparred about it. I am just emphatic about how important the competition is going to be throughout this camp. And when I say the competition, it's not just one, right? I don't think it's just that left tackle. As I mentioned, I think 3 out of the 5 spots on Washington's offensive line are wide open. Left tackle, right tackle, and left guard. I think competition is going to be paramount there. I think competition is going to be plentiful at the defensive back spots, whether it's safety, whether it's corner. Competition is certainly needed. When we start on the offensive line, Chris, and you look at the competition that's going to play out there, am I crazy for thinking that Sam Cosmi and Tyler Biadasz are the only two who have their name written in pen on the depth mm-hmm. chart in comparison to pencil?
Yeah, I mean, you're crazy. Let's start with that. Just let's just say that as an overall arching point. But you're right, in my opinion, dead on, about the only two positions settled are, again, center and right guard. Now, you know, listen, I mean, unless Tyler Biadasz forgot how to play football, what right. you're getting is a guy who, I think over the last 1,300 or so pass rushing snaps, only allowed 4 sacks. He's been durable for the most part. And, you know, when you talk to Dan Quinn and when you talk to people that know him and coached against him and coached with him, they talk about how he just has a different level of vision, a different level of understanding in terms of what they want to accomplish. And that's going to go not only help the offensive line and shore up the interior, which was a mess, obviously, at center last year, yeah. Because Nick Gates didn't work out and Ricky Stromberg was a rookie and then got hurt and so on and so forth. But it has been a mess for, quite honestly, 3 years when Chase Roullier started yeah. getting hurt. And, you know, Biadasz is going to help out not only the interior of the offensive line, but he's going to help out the quarterback, too, the rookie quarterback, obviously, in Jaden Daniels, in terms of communication, in terms of seeing things, in terms of pointing out different, you know, different pressures, different things that he needs and they need Jaden Daniels to be ready for. So I think it was a huge, 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 huge signing and probably, you know, I would say one of the top 5 most underrated signings maybe around the NFL this offseason
wow.
in Biadasz. You know, obviously, we know Cosmi, like, you know, you and I have talked. Cosmi, he wasn't a tackle. People thought he was kind of a maybe a tackle, probably a guard coming out of Texas second round. That's why he dropped to the second round.
Right.
But he wasn't healthy. He wasn't on the field his first 2 years. And therefore, he couldn't develop. And he wasn't great, quite honestly, with speed rush and stuff to the outside at right tackle. So they moved him inside. And he, A, was better. And, B, he stayed healthy. So as long as he stays on the field, you're good there. I love what you said about Brandon Coleman earlier. I was listening as you have chronicled. And listen, I obviously agree. And I think you brought up a key point, again, something we've talked about at various times this offseason, is, you know, they don't have just a left tackle issue or question. They have a right tackle issue
right.
and question. And theoretically, they could have a left guard issue or question. We'll find out more from Dan Quinn and Adam Peters when they speak both tomorrow morning at 10:30 before training camp actually starts on the day that veterans get there. But the sense that I have is, you know, look, they understand they're not perfect, but they're not looking at this as we need to be perfect everywhere, because this is still, and maybe this annoys some people, this is still a make progress and developmental type year, not blow our wad all in 1 year year, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. The Brandon Coleman conversation is fascinating because I can see it now. And I'm not trying to speak this on him. For one, I personally think between the athleticism, between the footwork that I saw, and I, granted, no pads, no defense even in front of him, he seems as if he is the most athletic tackle on the roster already from day one. If for whatever reason, when the pads do come on, let's say Dante mm-hmm. Fowler's giving him fits, let's say Dorrance Armstrong's giving him fits, and they feel like, you know what, we don't have premium pass rushers, and he's struggling against these guys, I'm not going to be alarmed or worried or concerned if they choose to kick him inside to guard. I know some people will be, but I just think my old adage, man, when it comes to the big beefies up front, you put out your best 5 and you deal with the consequences later.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, obviously, everybody should want him to be proficient
for sure
at left tackle, right? We start with that. But if you have to kick him inside the guard, he ain't the first, and he's certainly not the last. And we just mentioned one of them in Sam Cosmi, right? And we've been down this road, you know, a number of times. I mean, shoot, you know, there were people, and I remember, Linnell, in the 2010 draft, Mike Shanahan and Bruce Allen, mm-hmm. hate to say that names, first draft, that thought Trent Williams wasn't going to cut it at left tackle. They
wow.
thought he was a right tackle. And, you know, Mike and Kyle brought him in, and he played left tackle, and he was great right away, or really good right away, or proficient right away, and he never moved. But there were people that were convinced that, you know, he could probably wind up at right tackle. You know, so guys that guys adjust differently, guys grow differently. If Brandon Coleman ultimately turns out to be a starting left guard, as I think you said, you know, like the job is to get the best five out there. Would that be a little bit disappointing? Yes, because everyone that I've talked to, everyone that you've talked to, and you've talked to Brandon yourself, believes he can be a left tackle, and he's got the athleticism and the nastiness and the strength. It's just going to take some time for him to develop at the NFL speed and pace. And by the way, if he struggles a little bit in camp or in the preseason, we shouldn't just give up on him.
No.
We shouldn't just give up on him because he is a rookie and he does have that left guard skill set, as he talked to us about like right after he was drafted. He does have that. It doesn't mean you have to tap into that bag right away.
Chris, I'll let you go on this, my friend. Outside of Jaden Daniels, the member of the Commanders that you're most interested in seeing come Wednesday.
I think I'm really excited to see how they try and use Frankie Luvu. I mean, yeah. I think we all have a pretty good feel for what they're going to do. You know, but certain packages will call for certain different positions and certain different alignments. And I want to see how much, and I don't know if we're going to be able to see this in the preseason or in practices even, you know, how much they blitz him, what is the alignment on third downs. And again, we got to be careful not to overreact to anything we see in August, because they're trying to save some stuff for game planning that they don't certainly want out there so that they could unleash that against Baker Mayfield and the Bucks and so on and so forth. But I'm curious to see that, really curious to see that. And then I'm also, you know, I mean, if you ask me for one on offense, I'm interested to see how the alignments go at wide receiver. Is Luke McCaffrey always in the slot? And how many four and five wide receiver sets are we going to see? I don't think you'll see a lot. You and I have talked about, you know, more 12 personnel, more 13 personnel, more tight ends, if you will. But I'm just interested to see kind of all the different things that we think we know or think we have a beat on, but we really don't know. And until we see it actually in regular season games, we still won't know.
Yeah, it is going to be fascinating. It's my favorite time of the year. We'll both be boots on the ground Wednesday out at practice. Chris, appreciate you giving us some of your time, my man.
You got it there, Linnell. I appreciate you.
That is the oldest in charge, Chris Russell, right here on Overtime. I mentioned we are jam-packed here tonight as we go to a mad sprint towards 10 o'clock. This is my final show for the start of NFL training camp, and we're covering the Washington Commanders from angle to angle. We just had Chris Russell, longtime beat writer for the Washington Commanders, someone that's been around this organization for a long time. Now, we're going to one of my favorite X's and O's specialists, our pal David Harrison, the host of the Locked On Commanders podcast, which you can check out on YouTube as well as wherever you download your podcast. David, we'll jump right into it, my friend.
Yeah, man.
Let's just cut the minutiae out of the way right now. I want to ask you a specific question about the big boys up front, because I've kind of, when I say I've gotten annoyed, know that I'm being facetious. It's just puzzled me that it feels like, David, the only competition that we're talking about when it comes to this offensive line is at left tackle. I feel like, DH, that we're looking at Biadasz and Cosmi as the only two guys on the front five that have their names written in pen on the depth chart. What do you think about some of the other competition spots along this offensive line, including whether or not a guy like Andrew Wiley may be on the roster bubble?
Yeah, you know, I'm with you on that. Actually, so my episode of Locked On Commanders that dropped on Monday, I actually opened up the show with three issues that the Washington Commanders are facing entering training camp, and issue number one was the offensive line and figuring that out. And two, from where I stand and from what I've seen so far, I feel like Tyler Biadasz is center, Sam Cosmi at right guard, and I actually think Andrew Wiley, right tackle, are pretty much solidified. Now, in the eyes of the team, maybe not, but just looking at the competition and looking at the reps, I just feel like Andrew Wiley, like he's going to have to really step on it, I think, to lose that job, honestly.
Yeah.
So I just feel like I'm pretty confident in saying that he's going to come out of this thing as a starting right tackle. Now, the left guard and the left tackle positions, you know, those are the ones that are certainly, I think, more up in the air. But I do think Nick Allegretti, like if I had to put a percentage on it, I'd say I'm probably like 70% certain
but David,
that Nick Allegretti is going to get that job. And then Les Ackles wide open, which, you know, I don't know if that's the greatest position to have wide open at this stage.
For
but
sure.
That's, you know, I think that's why it's being talked about, because I think the other four positions, like you said, they may not be, you know, written in pen, but they're written in pretty strong pencil, I think.
David, let me ask you this about the left guard spot with Allegretti. And I love him as much as the rest of the members of the media does. Just because the guy is good at the podium doesn't mean he's good at football, right? Like, that's – it feels like a lot of the hype right now with Nick Allegretti is based off of some answers he gave during a press conference session. Let's just be real here. He's never been a full-time starter in the NFL.
Yeah.
And Washington's got some other guys that are pretty interesting competition candidates, I would say, on the interior of that offensive line, like a Ricky Stromberg coming back. We don't know what year two of Brayton Daniels is going to bring. Why are you confident that Nick Allegretti will be that starting left guard here for D.C.?
That's just from what we've seen so far, right? And I think that the big grain of salt to take away from that is we haven't seen pads, we haven't seen live competition, and we haven't seen a ton of even team drills, you know, but without necessarily getting too deep into details. I'm not trying to bag a guy off of a couple of mini camp practices or a couple of OTA practices, but some of the reps I've seen from when Nick Allegretti's not on the field as a left guard, tell me that I think Nick Allegretti's probably got a pretty solid lead on that left guard job.
Okay.
And, you know, yeah, and it's not just the podium. I mean, you know, certainly, you know, I think right now he's like in the all-pro running of off-season comments and quotes, you know what I mean? He's certainly a fun dude to talk to and all those things. But I think just from a play standpoint, and then when you do turn on the tape of him compared to some of the other candidates that are going to vie for that job, you know, there's just things that you can kind of see that might fit into a Cliff Kingsbury offense more than some of these other guys, like the ability to get to the second level and not only get there, but also find work and find it in a violent nature, right? That's something that you and I have talked about. This. Like, I made no secret that, you know, if I have a big kind of gripe with Chris Paul's game, is that I think he's too passive.
Yeah.
I don't think he's aggressive enough. I don't think he's tenacious enough. And I think that he's certainly got the size, ability to do it. There's like a part of his mental motor that's got to click in. And I think that if Chris Paul were to get a little bit angrier, a little bit nastier, a little bit meaner on the field, that I think his game would elevate, you know, well for it. But I don't, you know, right now it just doesn't look like it's there. And so that's why I give the nod to Nick Allegretti. But you know, to the concept of competition, because you're right, you know, Dan Quinn has said that there's competition pretty much everywhere. I mean, it's still a long way away. Like, we're all excited for football, and I'm just excited as everybody else, but we're a long way away from that starting five having to be solidified. So there's certainly, whether it's Chris, it's Michael Dieter, whether it's, you know, Ricky Stromberg, you know, he's got guard experience. Like, anybody that wants to try to come in there and fight for that starting job, like, if the coaching staff is being honest, which I think they are right now, there's a window and an opportunity to put your butt in there and get that job.
Yeah, I'm super excited to see that portion of camp. And the thing that stinks about it, right, David, is we're going to have to wait a little bit, right, before we get the one-on-ones and before we get things getting nasty and we get to see the mean streak of a guy like a Brandon Coleman. But right away, some guys on the perimeter are going to be able to stand out from the get-go. Terry McLaurin, David, I don't know if you saw, just got voted to the top 100. He was voted the 97th best player in the NFL by his peers. I think he is someone, to me, that I'm really excited to see. I know we're worried about wide receiver 3 and whether or not Jahan Dotson is going to have a bounce-back year after a subpar sophomore season. Terry McLaurin, 4 straight 1,000-yard seasons. He was, what, 92 yards away in year 1 from having 5 straight 1,000-yard seasons to start the career, with a legit answer at quarterback, it seems like, in Jayden Daniels. One, David, how much do you think they're going to feature Scary Terry? And then two, if Jayden Daniels is the guy we all think he could be, what does it do for Terry McLaurin, and are you comfortable elevating him into that stratosphere of a legit top 10 to 12 receiver in the National Football League?
I think I'd be comfortable elevating Terry into like a top 15 projection this season based on Jayden. If Jayden can be a solid rookie quarterback, then I think Terry McLaurin certainly has that potential. And I think when you combine all that with a Cliff Kingsbury offense, and Terry's own, you know, focus on getting better, you know, yards after the catch and all those things. I think all those things combined kind of just serve to elevate Terry McLaurin's potential a little bit more. And you know, I think it really is. It's something I've watched with Mike Evans, you know, throughout his career there in Tampa. Is, you know, he's a consistent producer and doesn't, you know, make a lot of noise in the media as far as getting the ball and doing all these things. Like, the closest Terry McLaurin's ever come is, you know, that comment last season about getting a lot of cardio 1 week instead of getting the ball. You know what I mean? Like, that's the closest Terry McLaurin's ever gotten to, right, like, publicly criticizing coaching, game planning, or anything like that. And I think that this game, the game plans that we see out of Coach Kingsbury are probably going to fit Terry more. And then I think when you look back at that history in Arizona and DeAndre Hopkins, like, this is a guy who understands that getting the star, the ball, is a good idea. Like, for, you know, no matter the caliber of the star you have, it's a good idea to get your star players involved early and often. So I think that Terry McLaurin is going to absolutely be a focal point of this offense. And, you know, some of the throws that Jaden Daniels makes best are some of the routes that Terry McLaurin runs best. So I think it's just kind of a fit,
yep,
that you can really see Terry taking off. And, you know, I think like 1,300 yards is probably a pretty realistic, ooh, goal for him before we actually see this, yeah, thing getting humming. So I think that's probably a good benchmark to look for.
Joined right now by David Harrison, the host of the Locked On Commanders podcast. You can get that on YouTube. You can get that on WSA9.com, as well as wherever you download your podcast. David, obviously wide receiver and corner we'll get to see early. There's one other position group, David, that I feel like is flying under the radar. One, in terms of their usage for this year, and then two, just how impactful some of those guys in that room could be. I know we drafted a quarterback number 2 overall, right? And some people are going to say air raid offense, 35, 40 pass attempts per game. We saw that is not the formula, right, David, last year for a young quarterback to hit the ground running. I think this tight end unit, John Bates,
yeah,
Zach Ertz, Cole Turner, Armani Rogers, just to name a few guys are going to be in the mix there. How involved do you expect the tight ends to be in this offense? And for a guy like Cole Turner specifically, who once again went out there and participated in tight end U, I've been following him on social media. He's been getting good work in this offseason with wide receiver, yep, coaches, David. Not tight end coaches, wide receiver coaches. Is this the year that you think he could potentially get things going? And overall, like, how do you expect the tight ends to be featured here in this offense?
Yeah, the question with Cole is going to be, how well can he block? You know what I mean? Like, how much better has he gotten as a blocker? Because that's really been the biggest hurdle of him getting on the field. Like, as a receiver, you know, I don't want to sit here and say he's like a Travis Kelce type or anything, right, but, like, you know, his ability as a receiver is kind of a known commodity, and that's not, you know, the reason that he hasn't been getting on the field as much. It's his ability to be a contributor in that aspect of the game, because, you know, no offensive coordinator wants to get into a situation where, oh, this guy's on the field, then it's definitely a pass or a run, like, depending on who that guy is, right? Like, today's game is all about building versatility and keeping your opponent on their toes as much as possible, which is why we've seen the rise of the mobile quarterback and all those things. So for Cole, like, that's just going to be, you know, once we get pads on, like, that's not something, unfortunately, we can answer until we see,
right,
the pads and the joint practices and all those. That's where we're going to really see that. But as far as the tight end position in general, I think because of what we were just talking about with Cole Turner, like, the tight end position is going to be incredibly critical for this team and for Jaden Daniels to have success just in general. Because if the offensive line does falter, especially, you know, on the edge, obviously, then those tight ends are going to be asked to chip in as blockers, and even if they're chipping on their way out or holding an edge and then releasing late, things like that. But then, if they can get out there into the pass routes and in the middle part of the field, and Jaden can make things happen, we've already seen him do it a little bit in the OTAs and the mandatory minicamp, where he's moving one way, throws the ball the other way, and that's something that, like, defenders just hate that stuff, right?
Yes.
Because you basically, it's like an option route. You're just kind of, or it's like an option play in college where you're just kind of being forced to make a decision as a defender with, do you follow the quarterback and give up that backside route or adjustment, or do you hold back, but then you also give up the edge to the quarterback and you got to trust? And that's where defenders, man, like, it's almost like, you know, being in like a riot type of situation where you just have to be able to read the chaos,
yes,
but also trust that the guy that's next to you is reading it the same way. And all it takes is one person to not read it the way that everybody else is reading. And it's really hard to practice that. It's really hard to choreograph that as a defense. So that's where Jaden Daniels can really make an impact. And I think not just the tight ends, but running backs that are leaking out late, receivers that are coming back to the ball. You know, that's where you're going to see a lot of guys get opportunities later on in the down, is from Jaden extending and then finding open space behind the defenders.
Real quickly here, David, I'll let you go on this, my man. Two-parter for you. One, anybody that any, and I hate to ask you to do this, but anybody that you think is a surprise cut candidate that maybe in years past would have been safe based on draft status, financial positioning, or whatever. And then two, who's the guy outside of Jaden Daniels, man, that you're looking most forward to seeing come training camp?
If I have to pick someone who might be a surprise cut, I think you got to kind of look at Fedarian Mathis. I think that, you know, depending on how quickly Johnny Newton can get on the practice field, you know, depending on what John Ridgeway, Benning Pothai, those guys are doing, depending on how many interior linemen they want to keep just in general, because they got a lot of rotational players that they can work in there as well. And, you know, the defense going back to like Dallas days and even like Joe Witt Jr., just the history of the teams he's been a part of. There's a lot of two down linemen, a lot of three down linemen. So if you're only using two or three down linemen, you don't need, you know, five interior defensive linemen. And unfortunately, you know, injuries have obviously had a big part with his career and his kind of inability to launch, so to speak. But, you know, we'll see what comes of that. But I think certainly that's a name that, you know, you would watch that, given the where he was drafted and when, like, given, you know, coming this many years later down the road, you wouldn't expect that to kind of be part of that. And then as far as players, outside of Jaden, I think Mike Sainer still. First of all, I like the way that he carries himself. I like the way that he interacts with people, not just like the media, but teammates and fans when they've been out there on occasion so far. But also I think that he's a very crucial part of this defense. I think if he can come in and really secure that slot defender position and be that guy for this defense as a rookie, then it really frees up Joey Jr. and those position coaches to do a lot more things. But if he falters somehow, or just isn't ready, you know, as ready as they would like him to be, and they've got to move maybe Quan Martin into that position for a period of time or for certain looks or what it is, and then maybe Percy Butler or Defoe has to go back there at safety. Like, it just, it kind of starts, it has this, like, trickle-down effect, right, where if that position isn't secured, then other spots in the secondary start to get compromised a little bit from what you want to do versus what you now need to do. And, you know, honestly, like, you know, if that happens and players get opportunities in places they didn't expect to, and you can end up finding an all-pro that way. That's happened before as well. So it doesn't necessarily spell doom by any means, but obviously you want to see that second-round pick. A lot of people said, you know, pound for pound, he's like the best football player in this draft. It's just the position that he plays and the kind of the nuance of it, why he, you know, he wasn't a day-one pick. But I think if Mike Sainer still comes in and can continue to be impressive, and especially, again, once the pads come on, once the contact gets real, you know, and if he can stand up and hold up, against some of the talent that's out there, then that's going to help this defense. It becomes a force multiplier by allowing those other players to play in these other roles while he secures that spot for the team.
For sure. David, it is going to be absolute fireworks. Training camp number 3 for your boy. I'm excited once again to be out there with you all covering this thing, man. We'll do it again soon.
Yes, sir. See you Wednesday.
That is David Harrison, the host of the Locked On Commanders podcast. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app at @DHarrison_82, and then check out that Locked On Commanders podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, you can also check it out at WSA9.com. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, I mentioned about 48 hours away from the start of training camp. Still getting some projections coming out there from certain media outlets about how good they think each NFL team will be. USA Today gave their record prediction for the Washington Commanders. Tell you what they think about the burgundy and gold heading into next year. Next on The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Yeah. 1-800-636-1067 is the number on the MGM National Harbor Listener Lines. You can tweet at me as well. It's at @NELL_BTP. It's overtime here on 1067 The Fan. You're tapped in to the youngest in charge, Mobile, Linnell Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock when we hand things over to the Infinity Sports Network. We'll talk all things Washington Wizards Summer League coming up here momentarily when our pal Chase Hughes of the Monumental Sports Network is set to join the program. I teased it before the break. One thing I want to talk about here real quick before we get to our pal, Chase Hughes. It's that time of year, right? Training camp getting ready to open up. Everyone's still putting out their predictions and things of that nature. USA Today Sports put out their NFL record predictions for all 32 teams across the National Football League. Here's some surprises. They have the Jets as the Super Bowl 59 winner. No, this was not me that wrote this column. They have the Jets as the Super Bowl 59 winner, though. Y'all know how hot I am on Aaron and the Jets and what they could potentially be this year. He's got the Packers as the number one seed, or the number two seed, rather, in the NFC at a 13-4 record. He's got the Rams at 10-7 as the sixth seed in the NFC. The Niners at 13-4, the one seed. He's got the Cowboys missing the playoffs. He's got the Dolphins missing the playoffs, the Chargers. It's going to be interesting to see what actually happens here. The Commanders' record, though, most sports books have them, they're over under, and their win total set at 6.5. Whoever wrote this for USA Today Sports, show us some love. Show us some love to the Burgundy and Gold. He's got Washington finishing with a record of 7-10. Does not have them making the postseason, though. You know how I feel. I am the prince of positivity when it comes to this group this year. And it's not unwarranted positivity. I just think, and this is just my gut feel. And my gut's wrong a lot. It's full. It's wrong a lot, too. I feel like they've got the right blend of people within the building, from the quarterback that they drafted to all the former players littered across the staff to the head coach that is known for instilling positivity and confidence in dudes. I just think they got the right blend of dudes in this building. I think they're going to go 10-7. Worst case scenario, I'm looking at 8-9. But I can see 10-7, 9-8. I can see 11-6, depending on how you're really feeling about them. You know, what if Jaden Daniels proves to be the guy and they've got it figured out at the quarterback position, I think you got to remove whatever ceiling or cap that you were going to put on this football team. They've got Washington at 7-10. 7-10. That's higher than the Vegas win total. That's over the 6.5. But it still isn't a whole lot of confidence in a group that I think maybe, just maybe, needs to be getting a little bit more love locally. But nationally, it feels like everyone's all bought in. As I mentioned, NBA Summer League wrapped up this weekend for the Washington Wizards. We did not see the number 2 overall pick, Alex Saar, in the finale. When we get back, though, we will wrap up and put a bow on Wizards Summer League with our pal Chase Hughes next here on The Fan. Welcome back. It's overtime. 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey apps. The Youngest in Charge Movement, Linnell Willingham. About another hour or so left with you before we kick things over to our pal Bart Winkler in the Infinity Sports Network. We've talked all things Washington Commanders to start the show. We went over Mark Ein and his comments to our pal Kevin Sheehan. We talked about position battles that we're looking at heading into training camp. Right now, though, I want to switch gears here and do a 180. Is that what they call it? A little bit of a 180. We'll talk all things Washington Wizards as the DC family fresh off of the Vegas Summer League. And it's a pretty big lull between now and the start of training camp for the Washington Wizards. We may see some ancillary moves to the roster via trade or free agency, but for right now, it kind of is what it is when it comes to the Wizards. Joining us right now to talk all things Wizards Summer League is our pal Chase Hughes, who covers the team for the Monumental Sports Network. Make sure you give him a follow on the X app at Chase DC Sports. Chase, what's going on, my man? How you feeling? Chase, you there, buddy?
Can you hear me?
I got you. I didn't pot you up because I'm not a good radio professional all the way. So I forgot to hit the button. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
How did Vegas treat you, first and foremost? I know you were out there moving and grooving, watching Summer League, networking, of course, as I know you always do. Any fascinating Vegas conversation you had, non-Wizards, that you don't mind sharing?
Well, I went to the Sphere for the first time. Uh-huh. I also saw Cirque du Soleil for the first time as well, and that was cool. But the Sphere, that was the thing I came back telling everyone about, because it was pretty spectacular. I saw Dead and Company, and I'll just say it lives up to the hype.
For sure, man. I know Vegas has become, you know, a big traveling destination for a lot of different folks, and Summer League has become a must-go-to event. I know we had this conversation last year. I was like, Chase, this year is the year. I'm going. Obviously, things didn't work out that way. I got to watch it via the Monumental Sports Network, though. It was interesting to see, or via ESPN. Look at me trying to give you a shameless plug. You got to appreciate it, though, Chase.
We'll take it.
But look, watching the three first rounders through Summer League, I thought was an up and down roller coaster experience. The one consistent thing, though, was Bub Carrington, Washington's second first round pick. He made the All-Summer League second team. I thought he was snubbed for the first team. In terms of what you saw from Bub out in the summer, is there anything, Chase, and I know you do a ton of homework on these guys beforehand, though, is there anything that stood out to you and made you go, wow, I knew Bub was good, but damn, I didn't know he could do this?
I'd say the rebounding. Averaging 7.2 rebounds per game as a guard, as essentially a point guard, is pretty remarkable. I have always loved the Summer League, and I just recently discovered that Real GM, which is a great website, has a database of historical data in the Summer League. So you can compare what these guys just did to players of the past. And I was running some numbers today, and Bub Carrington had one of the best Summer Leagues from a rebounding perspective of any point guard that has played in the Summer League. He's had the fourth most rebounds per game at that position in the history of the Summer League, and it was right on par with Lonzo Ball. And I thought that was interesting because Lonzo Ball averaged about the same amount of rebounds and then went on to, he's in his career, averaged 5.7 rebounds per game. That's a really good number for a point guard. So I think it bodes well for Bub Carrington moving forward, and especially because the Wizards, that's arguably their biggest weakness. They were 29th in rebounding last year, so they added some help with Jonas Valanciunas, but you know, sometimes it goes underrated how much a guy at the point guard position can help you and help your cause when it comes to rebounding. So I think it could be a really good fit for him, and I think he was one of the best players in the Summer League this year. I think he would have been first team maybe if his shooting percentage was a little bit higher.
Yeah, I can agree with that. And some of those shooting percentage numbers, this is why, you know, stats always need context provided. When you go 0-for and a half the way he did, it felt like a couple of different times, and then end up with a 20 ball, you realize that, hey, the percentage doesn't matter so much. This is a guy that's got the confidence, deserving of being on that first team here in the Summer League. One thing that stood out to me while watching Chase with all three of those guys is you see what this new front office is looking for. They're long. I thought as the games continued to play out, they became a little bit more competitive on the defensive end of the floor. But the thing that really stood out most to me and that I was most surprised by was Keyshawn George. I didn't know what to expect from him heading into this Summer League. I know that he was someone I was high on during the pre-draft process simply because of the measurables and then the skill set. But I talked to our pal Chris Miles of NBA TV after the draft and just completely dunked on Keyshawn George. I got to send old Chris Miles a text because he showed out in Summer League and definitely was one of Washington's bright spots.
Well, we love Chris Miles, but he's a Knicks fan, so you got to take everything he says with some degree of a grain of salt. But, yeah, first of all, on what the Wizards are looking for, I thought it was notable that all three guys looked the part, right? They didn't look undersized. They didn't look too slow or not athletic enough. And sometimes you see that right away in the Summer League.
Yes.
You know, a team will draft a player and they put him out there and it's like, hold on a second, this guy's undersized or he's not athletic enough to play at this level. And I think the Summer League is a good gauge for that because it's arguably the second most athletic league in the world. It's not the second best league in the world. That would be the Euro League because they're very skilled professional basketball players in other leagues around the world. But the best athletes in college basketball and in the junior ranks tend to get pooled together in Summer League. And there's a lot of guys who get flyers taken on them simply because they are big and athletic and they have the traits that you can't teach. So a team will take a chance on them. So Keyshawn George, I thought, did a tremendous job of being efficient within the flow of the offense. You know, he shot over 40% from three, which is what he did in college. and he shot consistently from three. He made at least one three in every game. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was noteworthy because he didn't seem like he really forced anything. Like, he was pretty selective with his shots, and he just knocked them down. And I think that bodes well for a young player who's going to try to earn minutes in the Wizards' rotation. And I think it is a good sign that he'll be able to impact their second unit as a three-point shooter this year.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest takeaway. I didn't know right after he was drafted whether or not he'd be able to contribute in that rotation. I think I have a lot more confidence, as you mentioned, after watching Summer League, that there's, you know, a pretty good chance that he is a part of that second unit for D.C. and maybe start some games based on the way the injury situation goes. The Wizards' number two overall pick, Alex Saar, the center of a lot of scrutiny from national media, local media. I want to talk about some of the positives that we saw from Alex Saar. Defensively, let's just be real here. I know everyone's enamored by the shot blocking, Chase, but to me, his best defensive trait is that ability to switch on to guards. We saw him a couple of different times get switched out onto a quicker guard, even get blown by and then have the recovery to block the shot. What did you think about what you saw from Saar defensively? And is that something that you think is going to be able to translate right away once we get to going up against the big boys?
Well, yeah, it was an interesting contrast because you mentioned he did not play very well offensively, at least in the last three games. His debut, I thought he was pretty good against the Hawks, you know, ended up with a pretty solid stat line, had four blocks in that game. But as much as he struggled offensively, he was great defensively. I mean, he ended up with 10 blocks in four games, averaging 2.5 a game. And it wasn't just the shot blocking, as you mentioned. He's got the agility and the foot speed to switch on to smaller players and trail them to the rim off the dribble. And that's something that a lot of big men don't have. So I think you have to feel pretty good about his ability to impact the Wizards right away defensively. And then offensively, I think you hope it's just a small sample size in terms of his shooting percentage, which was about 19% from the field. And going back to that database I mentioned, I found a few guys who had kind of struggled in the summer league and ended up being just fine. And one I would mention is Evan Mobley Jr. of the Cleveland Cavaliers. He was the third overall pick a few years ago. Actually, I think was the best pro comparison for Alex Saar in the pre-draft process. And Evan Mobley Jr. shot only 34% in his first summer league showing and has turned out to be a pretty good offensive player and a perennial guy who's in the conversation for all defense. And he shot 54% for his career so far. So he's ended up being a pretty efficient player, and I think he's got a really high offensive ceiling. And I'd say the same thing about Alex Saar. Even though the numbers weren't great, he showed flashes offensively of a pretty smooth outside jumper. He made some plays off the dribble. I liked his pull-up threes. I liked how he could shorten his shooting motion and beat close defense. So obviously that 0-for-15 performance is one he'd like to put past him. But overall, I think if you consider the defense, he showed plenty of good things in the summer league. And I would remind people that, you know, the fact that he can defend is part of his value. If his shot's not falling, he can still make a positive impact on the game.
I think that is, you know, perfectly stated about Alex Saar. One thing that concerned me a little bit offensively, Chase, is it felt like the confidence was sapped away from him. And that's, as a number two overall pick, man, you got to be confident in your abilities. I didn't like that seemed to wane as the shot wasn't falling, but you expect that with young cats. The other thing, just from a fundamental standpoint, too much fading away on shots near the basket, on the jump shot. So a lot of work for him to do on the offensive. And I'll let you go on this, my man. Do you think all three of these guys are in the rotation next year?
I think by the end of the season, yes. Alex Saar, definitely going to be in the rotation. Bub Carrington, definitely going to be in the rotation. Keyshawn George will be the question mark for me. I think he probably helped his cause in Vegas with the way he shot the ball from three. But, you know, they got some depth at his position. I would imagine that, you know, by the trade deadline, whether it be injuries or whether it be moves that they make, they'll clear the runway for him. But I feel pretty certain about Alex Saar and Bub Carrington. And Saar, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he started. Carrington at this point, you know, with Jordan Poole on the roster, I'd expect him to come off the bench. But, you know, as you often see with these young guys, especially if they're drafted that high, you know, by the end of the season, you know, they've been in the rotation all year, and then the team usually feels like they're ready to start by the end of the year. So I would expect that Alex Saar, if he doesn't start right away, will be starting by the end of the season.
Chase, appreciate you giving us some time, my man. Always good catching up.
Absolutely, man. Have a good one.
That is Chase Hughes, one of the best talking all things Washington Wizards, breaking down the NBA Summer League right here on The Fan. Final hour of power coming up. here on 106.7 The Fan, here on Overtime. We're going to go national NFL stories coming up on the other side of this break. But before we do that, or when we do that, I'm going to let you hear from a certain national media member that can't stop sipping the Commander's Kool-Aid. That's next here on The Fan.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Chase, you there, buddy?
Can you hear me?
I got you. I didn't pot you up because I'm not a good radio professional all the way. So I forgot to hit the button. How you doing, my man?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
How did Vegas treat you, first and foremost? I know you were out there moving and grooving, watching Summer League, networking, of course, as I know you always do. Any fascinating Vegas conversation you had, non-Wizards, that you don't mind sharing?
Well, I went to the Sphere for the first time. Uh-huh. I also saw Cirque du Soleil for the first time as well, and that was cool. But the Sphere, that was the thing I came back telling everyone about, because it was pretty spectacular. I saw Dead and Company, and I'll just say it lives up to the hype.
For sure, man. I know Vegas has become, you know, a big traveling destination for a lot of different folks, and Summer League has become a must-go-to event. I know we had this conversation last year. I was like, Chase, this year is the year. I'm going. Obviously, things didn't work out that way. I got to watch it via the Monumental Sports Network, though. It was interesting to see, or via ESPN. Look at me trying to give you a shameless plug. You got to appreciate it, though, Chase.
We'll take it.
But look, watching the three first-rounders through Summer League, I thought was an up-and-down roller coaster experience. The one consistent thing, though, was Bub Carrington, Washington's second first-round pick. He made the All-Summer League second team. I thought he was snubbed for the first team. In terms of what you saw from Bub out in the summer, is there anything, Chase, and I know you do a ton of homework on these guys beforehand, though, is there anything that stood out to you and made you go, wow, I knew Bub was good, but damn, I didn't know he could do this?
I'd say the rebounding. Averaging 7.2 rebounds per game as a guard, as essentially a point guard, is pretty remarkable. Have always loved the Summer League, and I just recently discovered that Real GM, which is a great website, has a database of historical data in the Summer League. So you can compare what these guys just did to players of the past. And I was running some numbers today, and Bub Carrington had one of the best Summer Leagues from a rebounding perspective of any point guard that has played in the Summer League. He's had the fourth most rebounds per game at that position in the history of the Summer League. And it was right on par with Lonzo Ball. And I thought that was interesting because Lonzo Ball averaged about the same amount of rebounds and then went on to, he's in his career, averaged 5.7 rebounds per game. That's a really good number for a point guard. So I think it bodes well for Bub Carrington moving forward, and especially because the Wizards, that's arguably their biggest weakness. They were 29th in rebounding last year, so they added some help with Jonas Valanciunas, but you know, sometimes it goes underrated how much a guy at the point guard position can help you and help your cause when it comes to rebounding. So I think it could be a really good fit for him. And I think he was one of the best players in the Summer League this year. I think he would have been first team maybe if his shooting percentage was a little bit higher.
Yeah, I can agree with that. And some of those shooting percentage numbers, this is why, you know, stats always need context provided. When you go 0-for and a half the way he did, it felt like a couple of different times, and then end up with a 20 ball, you realize that, hey, the percentage doesn't matter so much. this is a guy that's got the confidence, deserving of being on that first team here in the Summer League. One thing that stood out to me while watching Chase with all three of those guys is you see what this new front office is looking for. They're long. I thought as the games continued to play out, they became a little bit more competitive on the defensive end of the floor. But the thing that really stood out most to me and that I was most surprised by was Keyshawn George. I didn't know what to expect from him heading into this summer league. I know that he was someone I was high on during the pre-draft process simply because of the measurables and then the skill set. But I talked to our pal Chris Miles of NBA TV after the draft and just completely dunked on Keyshawn George. I got to send old Chris Miles a text because he showed out in summer league and definitely was one of Washington's bright spots.
Well, we love Chris Miles, but he's a Knicks fan, so you got to take everything he says with some degree of a grain of salt. But, yeah, first of all, on what the Wizards are looking for, I thought it was notable that all three guys looked the part, right? They didn't look undersized. They didn't look too slow or not athletic enough. And sometimes you see that right away in the summer league.
Yes.
You know, a team will draft a player and they put him out there, and it's like, hold on a second, this guy's undersized, or he's not athletic enough to play at this level. And I think the summer league is a good gauge for that, because it's arguably the second most athletic league in the world. It's not the second best league in the world. That would be the Euro League, because there are very skilled professional basketball players in other leagues around the world. But the best athletes in college basketball and in the junior ranks tend to get pooled together in summer league. And there's a lot of guys who get flyers taken on them simply because they are big and athletic and they have the traits that you can't teach. So a team will take a chance on them. So Keyshawn George, I thought, did a tremendous job of being efficient within the flow of the offense. You know, he shot over 40% from three, which is what he did in college, and he shot consistently from three. He made at least one three in every game, mm-hmm. and I thought it was noteworthy because he didn't seem like he really forced anything. Like, he was pretty selective with his shots, and he just knocked them down, and I think that bodes well for a young player who's going to try to earn minutes in the Wizards' rotation. And I think it is a good sign that he'll be able to impact their second unit as a three-point shooter this year.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest takeaway. I didn't know right after he was drafted whether or not he'd be able to contribute in that rotation. I think I have a lot more confidence, as you mentioned, after watching Summer League, that there's, you know, a pretty good chance that he is a part of that second unit for D.C. and maybe start some games based on the way the injury situation goes. The Wizards' number two overall pick, Alex Saar, the center of a lot of scrutiny from national media, local media. I want to talk about some of the positives that we saw from Alex Saar. Defensively, let's just be real here. I know everyone's enamored by the shot blocking, Chase, but to me, his best defensive trait is that ability to switch on to guards. We saw him a couple of different times get switched out onto a quicker guard, even get blown by and then have the recovery to block the shot. What did you think about what you saw from Saar defensively? And is that something that you think is going to be able to translate right away once we get to going up against the big boys?
Well, yeah, it was an interesting contrast because you mentioned he did not play very well offensively, at least in the last three games. Like his debut, I thought he was pretty good against the Hawks. You know, ended up with a pretty solid stat line, had four blocks in that game. But as much as he struggled offensively, he was great defensively. I mean, he ended up with 10 blocks in four games, averaging 2.5 a game. And it wasn't just the shot blocking, as you mentioned. He's got the agility and the foot speed to switch on to smaller players and trail them to the rim off the dribble. And that's something that a lot of big men don't have. So I think you have to feel pretty good about his ability to impact the Wizards right away defensively. And then offensively, I think you hope it's just a small sample size in terms of his shooting percentage, which was about 19% from the field. And going back to that database I mentioned, mm-hmm. I found a few guys who had kind of struggled in the summer league and ended up being just fine. And one I would mention is Evan Mobley Jr. of the Cleveland Cavaliers. He was the third overall pick a few years ago. Actually, I think was the best pro comparison for Alex Saar in the pre-draft process. And Evan Mobley Jr. shot only 34% in his first summer league showing and has turned out to be a pretty good offensive player and a perennial guy who's in the conversation for all defense, and he shot 54% for his career so far. So he's ended up being a pretty efficient player, and I think he's got a really high offensive ceiling. And I'd say the same thing about Alex Saar. Even though the numbers weren't great, he showed flashes offensively of a pretty smooth outside jumper. He made some plays off the dribble. I liked his pull-up threes. I liked how he could shorten his shooting motion and beat close defense. So obviously that 0-for-15 performance is one he'd like to put past him. But overall, I think if you consider the defense, he showed plenty of good things in the summer league. And I would remind people that, you know, the fact that he can defend is part of his value. If his shot's not falling, he can still make a positive impact on the game.
I think that is, you know, perfectly stated about Alex Saar. One thing that concerned me a little bit offensively, Chase, is it felt like the confidence was sapped away from him. And that's, as a number two overall pick, man, you got to be confident in your abilities. I didn't like that that seemed to wane as the shot wasn't falling, but you expect that with young cats. The other thing, just from a fundamental standpoint, too much fading away on shots near the basket, on the jump shot. So a lot of work for him to do on the offensive. And I'll let you go on this, my man. Do you think all three of these guys are in the rotation next year?
I think by the end of the season, yes. Alex Saar, definitely going to be in the rotation. Bub Carrington, definitely going to be in the rotation. Keyshawn George will be the question mark for me. I think he probably helped his cause in Vegas with the way he shot the ball from three. But, you know, they got some depth at his position. I would imagine that, you know, by the trade deadline, whether it be injuries or whether it be moves that they make, they'll clear the runway for him. But I feel pretty certain about Alex Saar and Bub Carrington. And Saar, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he started. Carrington at this point, you know, with Jordan Poole on the roster, I'd expect him to come off the bench. But, you know, as you often see with these young guys, especially if they're drafted that high, you know, by the end of the season, you know, they've been in the rotation all year, and then the team usually feels like they're ready to start by the end of the year. So I would expect that Alex Saar, if he doesn't start right away, will be starting by the end of the season.
Chase, appreciate you giving us some time, my man. Always good catching up.
Absolutely, man. Have a good one.
That is Chase Hughes, one of the best talking all things Washington Wizards, breaking down the NBA Summer League right here on The Fan. Final hour of power coming up here on 106.7 The Fan here on Overtime. We're going to go national NFL stories coming up on the other side of this break. But before we do that, or when we do that, we're going to let you hear from a certain national media member that can't stop sipping the Commander's Kool-Aid. That's next here on The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.